Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Wednesday. Let's get the day started. We're hoping here to help you contemplate and focus on what God has for you to do today. I read an interesting quote from an author, Nicholas Carr. He said, "What the internet seems to be doing is chipping away at my capacity for concentration and contemplation. Whether I'm online or not, my mind now expects to take in information the way the net distributes it, in a swiftly moving stream of particles. Once I was a scuba diver in the sea of words. Now I zip along the surface like a guy on a jet ski." Kind of interesting. So I think it's important to focus on going deep in God's word, going deep in prayer, just the spiritual disciplines of life, because this can be a real distraction. So I'm always encouraging myself to put away the electronic stuff and get out the written word, open my Bible, get a notebook, get a pen, start writing things down, start processing God's word through those kinds of spiritual disciplines, because that's the only way I can keep my head working better, I should say. Stephen Hawking died. You know, that's kind of a death. That's such a way of touching so many lives, doesn't it? He said that, "I regard the brain as a computer which will stop working when its components fail. There is no heaven or afterlife for broken down computers." That is a fairy story for people afraid of the dark. That's what Stephen Hawking said. He died at age 76. When he was 21, he was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease and told he had 2 years to live, and lived most of his life as an atheist. So pray for his soul. Hopefully on a deathbed, he had a change of heart, but who knows? All right, we're going to talk about anger. What about anger? What place does that have in our life? I'm thinking of all the verses on anger in Scripture. And of course, one of the first ones that jumps to mind is, "Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger." So for the anger, and that this is in James chapter 1. It says, "For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God." So we're going to talk about anger with my friend and counselor Todd Mullican from Mullican Counseling in Edina. He appears to already be on the studio line. Let's get him involved in this conversation, because anger is something we all struggle with a little bit, maybe especially men. Anyway, there's a blanket statement to get the day started. 7 minutes after the hour, we'll be right back with Todd. It is 8 minutes after the hour. Todd Mullican is on the line. We need more cowbell. You there, Todd?
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. I'm a drummer professionally, and I haven't heard the word cowbell
That's
for quite a while.
That's why I threw in the, yeah, we need more cowbell, because I know you're a drummer.
Wow, so fun.
Well, let's talk about anger, because it's something that most of us have, struggle with, deal with, and have to process through spiritual disciplines. The Bible seems to say quite a bit about it. Be angry, but do not sin. Do we have permission to be angry?
I think we do. You know, our Lord had times of being angry and sharing that. And so I do think it's, you know, I hand out trusty feelings sheets to most of my clients. And the feelings include being mad, sad, scared, joyful, powerful, peaceful. And then by each of those main feelings, there's a bunch of other feelings that mean the same thing. And so angry is a mad feeling, mm-hmm. and there are times when we're mad.
Mm-hmm.
Anger also is a secondary emotion for hurt. So oftentimes when you and I struggle with anger, we are hurt, actually. So I think the word gives us some ideas on how to deal with it, though. Another verse I was just thinking of is Proverbs 29:11 that says, "Don't give full vent to your anger." What you were talking about there in Ephesians 4:26 was saying, you know, in your anger do not sin. And then, you know, we always hear the verse right after that: "Don't let the sun go down in your anger, and let the devil get a foothold." So, my own perspective on it, again, not to put us in boxes, but in general, I've seen there are two types of people. You know, Jesus came full of truth and grace, like we read about in John 1. And some of us, I think, are really good at being truth tellers. And some of us are good with grace.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes, the truth teller has a hard time with grace in their relationships. And then the grace-based person has a hard time sometimes speaking their truth when they need to. So my own view of anger, Bill, is that for those of us that are more of those truth tellers, kind of in our worst moments, a need to be right person, I think the word is saying, you know, watch what you say when you're angry, because that's usually where, if I'm a truth teller, I sin in my anger by what I say to my spouse, or what I say to my child, or what I say to my parent, or what I say to my friend, is when I am dysregulated with anger and I'm really mad, it's what I say that's pretty sinful. Whereas the more grace-based person, I have found, like that verse 27 is really for them, where they'll just hang on to the anger. You know what I mean? They'll keep it inside. And then I say that most of the people pleasers, their vulnerability with anger, Bill, is they build this resentment account they don't realize they're building.
Mm.
You know, they don't share the feeling of anger when they have it, because that's wrong or bad or not Christ-like. So I need to keep that in. I'll just avoid it. But boy, without knowing it, the devil gets a foothold in that, and it just builds over time. And a lot of times in their marriage or their friendships, they build this resentment account of anger towards the other person because they didn't address what they were feeling, you know, 2 days ago at 4 o'clock.
Interesting.
So
Todd,
that's a little bit of my sense of how different types of people deal with anger.
Mm-hmm. So if we said to ourselves, if we had this internal thought that said, I'm going to reserve my anger in life for things that matter, is there righteous anger? And can we really be angry and not sin?
Yeah, I think we can by how we handle it. You know, I mean, if we can get to the root of it, you know, I liked what you talked about earlier in the show about a spiritual discipline and writing things down. And I think the key with anger is really slowing the engine down when we are feeling angry. And, you know, and just if we have to communicate it with somebody, let's do it in a very healthy way. When I speak on conflict with individuals and couples, I always try to say, you know, speak without being offensive, and then listen without being defensive. So, yeah, I think there's a place for it. I think it is one of the emotions we have, but I think we need to do it well. I think we need to do it in a way where we don't sin, you know, and I think, but again, what's my tendency? Am I always flaw finding with somebody and truth telling them and always having anger? Then I need to slow that down and say, what's this about for me? And why am I always going to what I'm against or what I'm, you know, always angry about? Or if I'm just building up these anger, this resentment account and not knowing where it's coming from, I need to slow down, sit in the Word and write down, you know, what's this anger about and where's it coming from?
Mm-hmm.
So I think the tricky part about anger, Bill, is, you know, trying to get our arms around it and communicate it in a healthy way when we have it.
What about unresolved anger, past wounds, things that we kind of keep us stuck and we want to move forward, but maybe we don't, because how do we resolve or how do we heal from past anger?
Yeah, that's really hard, you know. So I think, again, depending on the, you know, the situation is different for everybody, obviously, right? But if I've got, you know, an old wound from a friend that I haven't addressed that with, or if I was in a pattern as a child where, you know, how I was parented wasn't healthy and I don't you know, I'm in a new, you know, I'm in a relationship now with my spouse, and I haven't really dealt with that past hurt, then a lot of times I'm taking that out, you know, on the person I'm with without addressing what happened in the past. So I think, you know, the past wounds we have can really impact, you know, how we communicate today. So what we need to be able to do, you know, either through counseling, you know, prayer, and, you know, dealing with somebody, a good friend, talking it through, we need to be able to go, yeah, I think that's where the root is, and Lord help me, you know, deal with the root cause. So I always say, well, like with couples, let each other in versus take things out on each other. And so I think our, or even, you know, with parent-child relationships, you know, how do we make sure that we learn from our past versus being defined by our past?
All right, Todd, we are going to take a little break. When I come back, I want to ask you about bearing one another's burdens. When do we do that? And when do we say, ooh, I got to let this person carry their own load and figure this out themselves? Obviously, I want to have compassion, but I also don't want to be enabling somebody to grow. That's the question coming up next to Todd Mulliken from Mulliken Counseling in Edina. If you have a question for Todd, 877-933-2484. You can join the conversation, or if you would like, just email me, bill@myfaithradio.com. Better do it quickly, though, because we have Todd for about 8 more minutes. Welcome back to the show. 18 minutes after the hour, I'm speaking to Todd Mulliken from Mulliken Counseling here in the Edina area of the greater Twin Cities of Minneapolis/St. Paul. Todd, what's the difference between anger and forgiveness? If I've been wronged, I get to hang on to that, don't I? Until justice is served? Boy, that ain't
Boy,
me talking.
Yeah. Well, you know, Philip Yancey wrote a book a while ago called What's So Amazing About Grace. And I remember a quote in that book. He said, the only thing harder than forgiveness is the alternative. And, you know, the alternative is resentment, bitterness, malice, you know, hanging on to things. So I think when I'm choosing to hang on to something from a place of victimization because of something somebody did to me, you know, I'm not trying to make this sound, you know, formulaic, but I do need to, you know, be able to do the idea that I've got to choose to let that go, either through a conversation if I'm still in relationship with that person, or letting that go so I can be free to move on in my story. And again, as you talked about earlier, those are the kinds of unresolved things where if I don't let go of that, then I'm kind of walking around with a limp emotionally, and then I'm taking things out on somebody else, especially if it's in an area that's the same area that I got hurt in, if that makes sense. So if I'm, you know, again, if I go into the parent thing, so if I'm as a child, if I was hurt by a parent a certain way and I haven't really let that go, then if I'm not careful, I'm going to take that same kind of way I was parented, I'm going to be parenting my child in that way, that generational sin, if you will, that pattern of hurt I'm going to keep doing in my life towards somebody else. So I do think it's important to kind of do the best we can in Christ to keep our house clean from unresolved anger that's hanging around. And that's easier said than done, but because a lot of times we don't realize we're doing that. So I do think, you know, there's something so powerful about being in the Word and just saying, hey, Lord, you know, show me through your Word today about, is there any kind of unresolved stuff? Because I am kind of feeling like I'm pretty easily angered today. What's that about? So
Interesting.
I that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. Total sense. What about past wounds and saying, I need to bear this person's burden versus I got to let this person figure this out themselves? When are you showing compassion and when are you enabling and not really helping somebody?
I think I've got to look at my tendencies a little bit. And again, I have found over time it helps to know my own patterns. So What's my pattern? If my pattern is kind of, I'm not known as one of those pleaser types. I'm known as kind of a rough around the edges person, and I'm kind of more, hey, let them figure it out on their own. Then I probably need to go to the well and through prayer and learn how to show compassion to somebody else and practice that more in my life. In my book on parenting, I talk about 5 C's for a healthy parent, and one of it is showing compassion. But in my book, I say if you're a parent that is really authoritative in a way that's more unhealthy and always getting the last word and always being demanding, I need to be practicing compassion more. And so I might be just praying for opportunities to really lean into, Galatians 6:1 there about carrying the burden of somebody else in a healthy way for a season, or really being there for somebody. But on the other hand, Bill, if I'm this person that's, boy, always in other people's stuff, and I'm, always helpful to everybody else all the time, and I'm in a relationship where I seem to be, carrying this person's burden, but they're not working on their own issue, and all of a sudden it moves from, helping somebody to, like you said, to enabling somebody, then boy, I'm not helping anybody. I'm hurting myself. I'm really, pouring the other person another drink, if you will, emotionally. And it's not doing anybody any favors. So I think we've got to be discerning about that. What's the truth about that situation that I'm in? Yeah, am I showing compassion? But really, sometimes the best way to show compassion, like as a parent, if you will, if I'm more of that pleaser-based parent, is to make the tough call. And to, Jesus showed compassion in different ways, I think. The woman at the well, he was, showed compassion through mercy and healing and understanding. And but boy, the people that thought they didn't need any help and I got this, the Pharisees, he showed compassion by being a little bit more direct. So I think we've got to be discerning about the situation, and also what's my own pattern? What do I notice that I do? Do I have a tendency to just say, hey, I got to do Galatians 6:1 every day with everybody I'm with, and I've got to carry everybody's burdens, and next thing we're exhausted and we're not filled up, living that abundant life because we're taking things on in a way that's more unhealthy. And I think there's a lot of Christians, I think we can be vulnerable to doing that.
Todd, I had a caller, Vince, from the Twin Cities here. He said, while it's wrong to inappropriately express your anger, it's also a sin to not express your anger at all. Is it a sin to not express your anger? He said, here's a situation he was in. He saw some boys abusing a homeless man some time ago, and while he was angry, he didn't express it, but he turned and walked away. So he's having a hard time forgiving himself. He feels guilty about not confronting the boys. So here's an opportunity where this anger came up in him, and then he didn't act on it. So is there a way to express your anger without sinning? And
Boy,
maybe,
what a great
well,
example.
yeah, I mean, unless you're Chuck Norris, I don't know who's going to be doing this, confronting these kids.
Exactly. And I think obviously it's such a great discerning moment, just to have the clarity of mind afterwards to sense, boy, what could I have done there? But I think we've got to be discerning about the situations. But in any kind of situation we have where afterwards we feel like, I was angry and didn't say it, I think that's a moment to just let ourselves know, maybe God's showing me something there. Maybe my tendency is to not share anger in a way that I need to. And I think, expressing healthy anger is a very appropriate thing to do. It's just, again, Bill, it's the people that always, the Monday morning quarterback's always expressing anger to their pastor about what they didn't say in the sermon, or they're always flaw finding their partner, or they're always telling people what's wrong. Then they need to, watch that, because that's all they're doing is expressing anger. Does that make sense?
Oh,
Whereas
total
people that,
sense. Yeah.
like the Vinces of the world, who said that in a moment, golly, I was feeling something but I didn't say it. What a wonderful way to just slow down and say, yeah, next time I do, have a moment of anger, how do I share that in a healthy way, in a reasonable way? And I think the way we do that is just is to be able to just, if you will, through kind of an I statement, I'm really feeling hurt. Because, well, again, anger usually means we're hurt or we're concerned. And so we say that, I am really feeling kind of hurt about what you said yesterday. Can we talk through that together? Yeah, it's a very healthy thing to do versus, I'm just going to keep that one to myself and God doesn't want me to be angry. And I better not sin in my anger. So I'm just not going to say anything. And boy, next thing you know, we've got unresolved little mini resentment accounts building.
Yeah.
So I do think, in concert with the Holy Spirit, the Spirit of Truth, just to, again, take a deep breath and share, the hurt we're feeling in that moment and try to have a dialogue with that person versus being a person that needs to be right or a peace person that needs to be liked.
Yeah.
And I think that's the deal there.
Thanks, Todd, for coming on the show. Always look forward to our conversations. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks, Bill. Take care.
You bet. 27 minutes after the hour, we'll take a short break and come back with more. It is half past the hour. Thanks again, Todd Mullican, for joining in on the conversation about anger. Been very interesting. It's good to go read those passages in Scripture about anger. Anger is not a good thing unless you use it well, and that's hard to do. I'm sure on my tombstone it will say, ignored the advice. That's just what I'm guessing. We've got a great half hour coming up. Professor Jonathan Den Hartog will be with us, giving us a history lesson. Looking forward to that in about 9 minutes.
You're listening to the Faith Radio Network, your home for relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching. Join interactive talk programming on topics that matter. Our mission is to lead people to Christ and to nurture believers in their faith through Christ-centered media. We hope that you grow closer to God each day as you listen, because together we're growing in our faith. Faith Radio. Learn more at myfaithradio.com.
It's 24 minutes until the top of the hour. We're having a history lesson coming up in just a few minutes with Professor Jonathan Den Hartog. Looking forward to that conversation. He is already in studio. But in the meantime, the Bible is clear about how we can relate to God, others, and ourselves on a deeper level. We can do our part by applying its truths to our lives on a daily basis. Ken Sandy, author and founder of Peacemaker Ministries, talks about this.
We group them as God awareness, God engagement, the top of our circle. Then down the right-hand side, it's self-awareness, self-engagement. And then the lower left-hand side of the circle is other awareness, other engagement. And you can put every verse in the Bible into that circle in one of those three areas, because every verse in the Bible is telling us how to know and love God, how to understand and manage ourselves, and how to read and minister and love our neighbor.
If you want to hear that full interview, head over to myfaithradio.com, Ken Sandy, S-A-N-D-E. That will get you there. We'll take a short break, and then history is next.
What's the most critical problem facing this country today? This is Jim Garlow. Here's how some responded to that question. More than half of those surveyed responded, the economy is the most critical problem. Not surprising. But what is surprising is how few people thought the most crucial problem has anything to do with moral values, even though our media is full of reports of moral scandals, lies, cover-ups, and questionable political deals. And we fail to see the connection. We're in the mess we're in because of the weak moral values, the greed, and dishonesty. Make no mistake about it. The problem in our economy and anything else you might name is related to biblical values. The result is government thievery, excessive debt, and the theft of life from those who are not even yet born. Moral uprightness, that's the most critical problem facing this country today. This is Jim Garlow.
Devil ain't lazy. No, 22 minutes until the top of the hour. It's time for a little history lesson. Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog is in studio. He is chair of the history department here at the University of Northwestern. Jonathan, what are the perks of being the chair of the history department?
Well, good morning. It's great to be with you again. Perks, I get to go to more meetings. I get to fill out more paperwork. So lots of benefits.
Many are envious right now.
Exactly. Yes. No, in reality, it is good to take on some of those responsibilities to make sure that the department is flourishing and to tell prospective students and to tell families about what we have here at Northwestern,
awesome.
Especially in our history department.
Awesome. Now, it seems that around the country, there are students walking out, having walkouts regarding gun control in our country. They're taking a stand. So as they are walking out, let's have a teach-in about what American history has taught us about the gun issue and the Second Amendment. I'd love a little history lesson, a little refresher course.
Right. So even today in schools, maybe even in Minnesota, we're going to be seeing students walking out of class. Now, I think let's say this is kind of a symbolic gesture rather than going to have important policy moments. Also, I sometimes question if you're protesting and you're doing something that you want to do, right? I'm going to protest by not doing my dishes if I didn't want to do them.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure really carries
I'm
a
in
great,
on that protest.
Yeah, carries a great sacrifice mm-hmm. for people. But if somebody were protesting and we were doing a teach-in, I'd want to teach about American history. And the era I'd want to go back to is to understand, well, why do we have a Second Amendment in the first place?
Thank you.
Right?
Yes.
Why is it there? And it wasn't just because the drafters blinked and they forgot about it or it got slipped in under cover of darkness. It was built on both a specific practice at the time and a specific outlook to defense. So the outlook, I think, is the practice, first of all, was that in many communities, individuals were required to participate in the militia.
Mm-hmm.
So they had to have their own arms to defend their community. So gun usage was seen as defending the community, right? Defending homes and families. So it was a guarantee there. The ideas, I think, were twofold. One was about simple protection, right? That it was viewed as a defense for families when there was no other governmental structure to come in when people were in danger. But the larger political belief, I think, was that the defense had to be not only of kind of an individual home, but also against the potential for overweening government attacks. So it was a check on governmental power as well.
Mm-hmm. So there was in the Second Amendment was in a very wise way making it safe for democracy to flourish and to not let government have too much power and also to protect neighborhoods and communities. And all that seems to make sense. Does that translate into the 21st century?
Those are the questions that we're asking
mm-hmm.
right now. I think with any even constitutional right, the courts have found that that some modifications are acceptable, but the rights themselves cannot be abridged.
Okay.
So that's why if you want to put some regulations on purchasing of firearms or prohibiting it from certain groups, the mentally ill, these are the courts have said those are acceptable, but taking away guns altogether is unconstitutional. Going back to the Heller gun control case, which came out of Chicago about a decade back now.
Mm-hmm. Now there's roughly 330 million people in the country, and there's about 300 million guns. So guns aren't going away. Wouldn't it just be easier to ban people?
We'll see how that goes. Some people do want to do that.
I know. Yes, they do.
But this is true. No, unless you're going to advocate for a wide-scale firearm confiscation.
Right. That wouldn't go well,
probably not going to happen.
No.
Well, and I think we need to recognize that both sides on this issue have claims. It's not like one side is totally illegitimate. But this is a great chance for us to listen to people on the other side of wherever we are on the issue.
Mm-hmm. A very volatile issue, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. I find that some of the steps being taken now and some of the issues that are being addressed by government, usually involves more regulation. And obviously, when it comes to schools, they're spending more and more money to try to protect students. I don't have a problem at all with that. But what about the amount of money that's being spent in school districts that are already broke?
Again, it goes to priorities.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very complex setting, and I don't envy people having to work those budgets.
Mm-hmm.
But let's point out that there. I guess I would want to say let's prioritize safety and education, and some of the other niceties can maybe fall by the wayside. Because mm-hmm. yes, we do need safe learning environments.
Yeah, Jonathan, how can we dialogue on such an emotionally charged issue?
Yeah. This is important, I think, something we keep coming back to in our fraught times.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just urge us all to – let's grant the best intentions for our opponents, and then from there try to present a clear, even-headed, rational case rather than one that's simply built on passion. And mm-hmm. the other thing is I think trying to make policy in the wake of grief – or immediate of tragedy is probably going to produce bad law rather than kind of calm reflection, which is what we need.
Mm-hmm. And all of these walkouts that people are having, shouldn't we be talking it out instead of walking it out? These protests, do they make a difference? Do they matter? Is it smart?
I would suggest it's probably not going to accomplish too much.
Okay.
I think that the better thing to do is to study the American system of government,
mm-hmm.
study its history, get grounded in understanding the system and the institutions of the country. And where you want to see change, work within the system to create the change that you want to see.
All right. We'll take a little break. When we come back, more with the professor, chair of the history department, Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog. I'm going to ask you, Jonathan, about the special election last night in Pennsylvania. I hope you're ready. Normally Kent Kaiser's here, but I think he's somewhere in Morocco.
Well, I've actually heard that he's in Casablanca. So I hope he has a great time, but I hope he gets back on the plane, because if he doesn't, he's going to regret it. Maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but soon and for the rest of his life.
Indeed. All right. We'll take a short break. 14 minutes until the top of the hour. It is 12 minutes until the top of the hour. So glad you're with me today. I've had Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog in studio. And Jonathan, last night, what a close finish. They say right now there's a 641 vote difference in the Pennsylvania runoff. Democrats ahead just by a little tiny bit. What do you think? Is there a blue wave coming?
Well, so the setup is this is a special election. It mm-hmm. falls out of the normal schedule mm-hmm. because the former U.S. representative had to resign, actually under disgrace, and so his seat had to be filled. It was scheduled for this week, and a lot of people have seen it as a bellwether. Now, what's remarkable is President Trump won this district by 20 points.
Mm-hmm.
Just in November of 2016. So this should have been considered a pretty safe Republican seat. And yet here we are. It looks like the Democratic candidate's name is Connor Lamb will have eked out a very tight victory. And there's still some absentee ballots to count. I'd rather be ahead by 600 votes than behind
sure.
at this point, with almost all votes being counted. So
mm-hmm.
it looks like the Democrat is going to kind of come in and win a pretty significant victory
mm-hmm.
here in what would have looked like a very safe Republican district. Now, what's going on? I always want to be careful of generalizing from a single event.
Mm-hmm.
There are some specifics going on. Very attractive Democratic candidate. I mean, he's young, energetic. He had a military service record. The Republican candidate did not campaign very well at
mm-hmm.
all. He was not a great representation for the Republican Party. Nonetheless, it also shows that even in a very, in this case, heavily Republican district, a Democrat could win. And I do think what it indicates is that there is a very polarizing effect of President Trump.
Yeah, they do want to try to say there's bad news for President Trump. I think they wrote that line before the election.
It was already ready to go.
It was
right?
ready to go.
President Trump was campaigning on Saturday, so it did get nationalized, and I think in the looking forward to the 2018 midterms, that's going to be the strategy of a lot of Democratic candidates, is to nationalize the election, try to connect opponents directly to President Trump. Whereas I think many Republicans will try to say, well, let's focus on what the Congress has already accomplished and what the negative side effects might be of not reelecting me, right? That Democrats really are aiming for the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm. It seems like if you're in the Trump administration, you could be out for a bumpy ride. It seems I find it interesting that President Trump fired Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, did it over a tweet. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think the administration has been a bumpy ride since its start. Yes, we have so more administrative turnover, right? So even last week, one of President Trump's key economic advisors, Gary Cohn, resigned, and he resigned over the tariffs that were being put in place on steel and aluminum. So there's there's turmoil on the economic side. Then on the diplomatic side, President Trump just decides to, shall we say, pull the trigger and fire his Secretary of State,
mm-hmm.
and without warning, even to the Department of State, and so it kind of blindsided some people there. So it was not set up as a smooth transition.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that President Trump and Mr. Tillerson had not developed a good working relationship over time, and so they were a little bit at cross purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So on some level, yes, the president definitely has the right to appoint whomever he wants to carry out his diplomatic vision. On the other hand, there's going to need to be improved kind of collaboration between the White House and the State Department, which just wasn't there over the last year.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the idea that the United States and North Korea might sit down and have conversations?
Again, we can be open to that, right? Always be interested to see where things are going to go. Now, what I think is different is for many years, the U.S. policy has been, we're happy to talk, but there have to be preconditions,
mm-hmm.
right? North Korea has to take these steps before we get to the bargaining table. And unfortunately, in this case, North Korea just reached out and said, hey, we'd love to meet. And the president jumped on it rather than saying, well, our official policy is you need to do these things first, right? That
mm-hmm.
Certain benchmarks have to be met. He just said, well, sure, I'll be happy to meet with the leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, kind of without conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so on one hand, I think this is President Trump saying, I will meet with anybody. I will be the deal maker. On the other hand, that also undercuts the American strategy previously of really requiring some things on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm a little bit leery of saying, well, this is going to accomplish very much, because very often North Korea has been happy to talk to our diplomats
mm-hmm.
without giving up too much. And so we need to really extract some definite concessions before we give anything away.
Yeah. Jonathan, every time you come in, I'm so fascinated with the way in which you can pretty much discuss just about anything, but your knowledge of history is not only inspiring, but it's intimidating, because I have always been fascinated with history, but I think when I was a student, I didn't really care that much about it. But now as an adult, that's something I wished I cared a lot about. So what little inspiration can you give these students out there, or what kind of advice can you give parents to encourage their kids to be more interested in history?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I hear this so often.
That
people
I'm sure
people
you do.
Say we want to learn more history, and let me just say, Bill, anytime you want to drop in on a class, you are more than welcome.
I would love to
join us.
Yeah,
but what I'd say to families is just there's a great value in studying history. Mm. So I would encourage people to take more classes. read good history books,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, even consider a history minor going along with some other interest, or even a history major, that we just think this is a great preparation for understanding the world and for going out and serving the world.
Yeah.
And the other point that we like to make is that history majors get great jobs.
Do they really?
That it's not simply a one-way ticket to McDonald's, but is in fact a great career
you
move.
You set me up, Jonathan. You set me up.
It's a great career move right. to prepare for understanding the world and having great skills
yes.
in our changing and dynamic world.
Yes. And to be able to put things in a context, which is what history does so beautifully. It's like if you don't know what's happened in the past, may not understand what's happening today or what might happen in the future.
That's exactly right. So that's important for our country. It's important for policymaking. And do we find any other aspects of our life where contextual thinking matters?
Yeah.
I actually think any problem-solving discipline, any problem-solving career is actually kind of has to draw on the history of the thing that is studying.
20 seconds left. Is there a website I could go to or a book I should start reading if I want to improve my knowledge of history?
Well, unwsp.edu/history
okay.
Will definitely take you to our history department.
Awesome.
And as far as history books, there are a lot of them. One textbook that we use is called Unto a Good Land. And it's
It's
an American history textbook.
Awesome. Thank you, Jonathan. You're always a delight. Nice to have you here.
Great to be here.
Yep. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up hour one. Thank you to Dr. Jonathan Den Hartog. You have to practice saying that name so it can roll off the tongue. That is a sensational hour one. Coming up just in a few minutes, Bill English will step in studio. We are going to go through Proverbs chapter 12. You're going to enjoy that a great deal. David Wheaton's going to be with me as well in hour two. That's all ahead. Be back in a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.